The Rural Roundup with Andy Thompson.
Welcome to the Rural Roundup podcast for Friday the 8th of April. My name is Andy Thompson. Today I am talking to independent economist Benji Patterson. Benji, g'day mate. Welcome to the Rural Roundup podcast.
Hey Andy, pleased to be here.
Mate, I read a piece you wrote the other day. I quite like the bit you're talking about craft beer. What I found interesting was the way you sort of prefaced your piece that I read and said economists are all sitting around with their crystal balls and they're all trying to figure out what the interest rate's going to do. As lay people, we sit here and we think you guys know actually what's going to go on. Are you saying that economists just making stuff up when it comes to projections or predictions into the future?
Look, economics is a bit of a dark art. It's something that marries science from a statistical perspective that brings in data points, but also then we have to make conjecture about the future. And when we make this conjecture, we're thinking about human behaviours and there's nothing funnier than folk, Andy.
Exactly. But I mean, that's interesting in itself, Benji, because, people are making decisions based on economist projections. They're making business decisions based on those. Should businesses be doing that?
Yeah, look, any business that's making decisions based on economist conjecture should always bring in a healthy dose of scepticism. And that's not to say they shouldn't listen to an economist viewpoint, but it's always important to think of a range of views, think of different scenarios, and walk through how they would respond if each one unfolds, because inevitably, while some might be right, it's also possible that the economist might have got it wrong.
It's funny, thinking back to the start of COVID, isn't it? And 2 years ago now, a lot of projections that were made were based on human behaviour, weren't they? And I would say 50% of them were right and 50% of them were wrong, and no one could pick what was going to be right or wrong, could they?
No, not at all. And the thing for me with when the pandemic first hit is everyone thought, we know how to do this. This is the global financial crisis version 2. Pretty quickly became apparent it wasn't. We just all had to stay at home and not cough on each other. There was no crisis of confidence or sudden spoiling of people's debt. It was something different, and we really had to learn what it meant. There's nothing in recent history for us that could teach us how businesses and how people would react when they're forced to quarantine from each other, essentially.
I found it fascinating how people and businesses, to coin a phrase, and I know it became very popular to use this term, pivoted. All of a sudden, people that were doing one thing, 5 minutes later, they'd readjusted, reorientated, and were doing completely different things. It just shows how adaptable human beings are, doesn't it?
Oh, exactly. The adaptability of people in New Zealand has been one of the key reasons why we've been able to thrive despite such a challenging environment over the past few years. Each time we get thrown another outbreak, another variant of concern, we get better, we know the drill, and while there are undoubtedly massive, massive challenges, it's quite remarkable how much of this economy is functioning when 10 or 20% of people at any one point in time might be stuck at home isolating.
And you live in Arrowtown, you live in the Queenstown district, and I would have, to take 50% of New Zealand's GDP, well, not 50% of New Zealand's GDP, but to take, what is it, $20 billion out of the economy, which is tourism, would have been not even unthinkable. You couldn't even think of a word to describe how unthinkable it would have been.
No, it was quite a head scratcher when it first hit. You know, thinking through how on earth are people going to cope and survive in this local area, and it was so multifaceted. You know, initially, some of it, yes, it was the government's help with the wage subsidy that kept lights on initially. There was also the property price boom that gave people extra zeros on their balance sheet despite their incomes being impaired. But then there was also that incredible adaptability and resilience of people. People went and worked in other industries. They began to work outside of the district and retain their home base. Tourism businesses began to more aggressively change their products so they could go after the Kiwi market. So there was a whole range of things, and it was really heartening for me to see what locals did in the face of something that looked like it was going to be a king hit for many.
Yeah, exactly. I suppose coming back to what we were going to talk about today is interest rates in the New Zealand economy. We've got something happening that we haven't seen. I'm old enough to remember inflation. I'm old enough to remember very high interest rates. Probably yourself, Benji, and a lot of people of your generation don't remember that, right? Don't remember what that was like back coming out of the 70s and into the 80s. Interest rate increases and inflation inevitable based on what's happened in the last 2 years, or did we do something wrong? Did we not understand the way it was going to play out?
I think the first thing to point out is that inflationary pressures are a global phenomenon at present. So while we could point the finger at certain things that happened in New Zealand and say that they've exacerbated the problem, and some of the behaviours of our businesses and our households might not be helping things, the reality is that globally inflation has become a problem. One of the key reasons for this is that we've had these supply chain disruptions. And we know that, we've talked about it for quite a while, but they're really beginning to come to a head at present, because demand's still been quite high across the globe. People are wanting to consume goods and services. They're wanting to buy things. And the reality is, there's just not quite enough of that stuff being produced globally to meet that demand. And when it is, it's not able to be efficiently shipped around the world. Some of that's because physically it can't get through the ports. Other reasons are because, you know, the price of oil has skyrocketed, for example, as a result of the crisis in the Ukraine. So there's a number of factors that come into it. But when you get to inflation, it doesn't always matter how it kicks off. The problem is what people make of it, how it affects their expectations of the future, and how it affects how they price their goods and services, and what they go into things with their boss when they're asking for a salary increase.
I was just going to ask you about that, because New Zealand has been called a low-wage economy for a long time. And with inflation, with price rises, with the cost of living crisis, we're starting to see real, real pressure on wages to increase. Is that just going to make this problem worse? Are we just in a cycle here that we're going to chase our tail?
There is a risk of that happening. There is a risk if these things become so ingrained that we expect to have large increases in our salaries, and businesses see it as an opportunity to push through quite big price increases. There's a risk that that becomes ingrained in everyone's expectations, and people begin to expect that they don't have 2 or 3% increases, that they have 5, 10% even increases. And so that's what organisations like the Reserve Bank are worried about. They're not so worried about so-called transitory inflationary pressures, things that are happening here and now. They're worried about us becoming a bit unhinged and expecting in a year's time to be able to go on and lift things up another 10%. That's what they want to fight.
Because the Reserve Bank Act says that they are to keep inflation, what, between 0 and 3%, correct?
And yeah, something like that. So they generally they want to get their Goldilocks numbers about 2% they want to aim for.
So the tool in the toolbox, right, is to raise interest rates to fight inflation. If we're talking about inflation running currently, what, you tell me, but I'm going to pluck a number out, 6%, is that a fair number?
That's about what we've officially seen, yeah.
Well, that's double. So what's that going to mean for interest rates? Which is, we're 9 minutes in and we've started to talk about interest rates finally. But, you know, that is the question. Where are interest rates going?
Well, interest rates are heading up, and they've already headed up. So if you look at the mortgage markets, mortgage rates, that's one of the best places to see what's happened. You know, fixed rates, say for 1 year, they're about 2%, middle of last year, just sort of like 7-8 months ago, say. Now they've pushed over 4%, so they have doubled, so they've increased. And the Reserve Bank is beginning to lift its own target interest rate, which flows through into mortgage rate markets as well. So mortgage rate markets, they're beginning to preempt further increases to come. And it is a bit of a given that the Reserve Bank needs to lift interest rates in order to fulfil its mandate. But lifting interest rates by a little and lifting them by a lot are two different things, and that's where the real challenge comes in for the Reserve Bank.
But if they're at the Act of Parliament, if their guidelines is between 0 and 3% inflation and it's running at 6%, do they have a choice by not lifting it a lot?
But they do have a little bit of discretion in there, because they can temporarily breach what they're required to do if they've got really good justification, and if they can see that things over the medium term, over say the next year or so, they believe that they're heading back to below that 3% level.
Your crystal ball, we've got next week, I think it's on the 13th, next Wednesday. What do you think would happen? And second question, if you were the Reserve Bank Governor, what would you do based on the current situation?
Yeah, so in terms of what will happen, it's actually quite difficult, because this is where you get into this conjecture about human behaviour. So I'm essentially conjecturing about what a bunch of people in a room are going to decide. I think it's pretty safe to say that it's an up, but everyone's quite split as to whether they do a little, so lift it 0.25%, or whether they lift it 0.5%, go for a big increase, a big jump. If it were me, I would probably err on the side of just lifting it 0.25%. Why would I do that? Well, I believe that a lot of the markets have already done quite a bit of heavy lifting already, and we haven't quite seen the full effects of that come through. That doubling of mortgage rates, if you were to go refix a $500,000 mortgage as a household, you'd suddenly need to find $200 every single week just to pay the lift in interest rates. So I think we've got to wait and see a little bit for that to come through. I would accompany what I'm doing, though, by a really strongly worded statement that I wasn't going to hesitate to act in future, that I would continue to lift interest rates as necessary, but it was just that I was conscious in the short term of lifting them too fast, too quickly, just in case that it derails what's happening in the economy. Because we've got to remember that confidence has taken a hit over recent weeks with what's happening globally and with the ongoing effects of the pandemic. So, and also we've begun to see house prices begin to slowly ease. So they've got that in the back of their mind as well.
Mm. I suppose, and this is always the question, you're talking about house mortgages. Farm mortgages are significantly bigger, right? And if those prices are rising, if those interest rates are rising, then that is a big whack of money coming out each month, on the 20th when that, or 31st, or whenever that one happens. Fixing those rates at the moment would be advisable, I would have thought, and I'm not asking you to predict or to ask that question, but the general rule at the moment is interest rates will be rising for some time, do you think?
Yeah, looking at the last monetary policy statement by the Reserve Bank, they seem to suggest that they will be raising rates right through into 2024, and that interest rates could go up another couple of percent from where they are at present. However, a lot has changed over the past couple of months since that view was put out by the bank. The war in Ukraine has really changed the game a little bit in the near term. It's really brought to a head some of these inflationary pressures. At the same time, with property prices no longer going up rapidly and in many big cities beginning to decline, it, quite modestly, but come back slightly, that does cool people's enthusiasm to go out and spend.
Yeah, it does. It does change your mindset a little bit. I guess the other thing, and I just made a wee note as we were talking, inflation has been because of internal spending, right? We can now travel. I've just booked a holiday overseas. That's a chunk of money that's not going to hit the New Zealand economy. It's going to go to Australia, basically. Is that going to change the inflation outlook as well?
It's going to change it in some pockets of the economy. So places where people were putting their discretionary spend because they couldn't travel, So that went into a lot of homeware retailing, DIY, as well as also some local cafes and that kind of thing. There will be some demand taken out of that. So on one hand, there won't be as much pressure to live from a demand perspective, but we've also got to remember that many of those businesses, their margins being squeezed by their own cost pressures, by the cost of labour because wages have gone up quite a bit, by the cost of importing goods that they're selling. So there still could be some pricing pressure.
You mentioned the war in Ukraine. Obviously, a big, massive exporter of food products. Is that going to be good for the New Zealand economy? We export food, but we don't export a lot of grain, I suppose. Russia exports a lot of protein as well.
Yeah, look, it's been good from a commodity price perspective. It's pushed up not just commodities that the Ukraine is a big exporter of or that Russia is a big exporter of, but it's also pushed up the prices of other substitute food products that people might want to consume. So from that perspective, it's been helpful, but it's been enormously disruptive from a cost perspective for businesses. You know, we've already talked about the effects on interest rates of inflation that's coming through, but we've also had quite rapid escalations to the cost of fuel, to the cost of diesel. So we've faced some real squeezes for those farm costs. So it's not a one-way street. It's not just a gravy train that's coming through in the farmers' back pockets.
I guess the other thing too, and this is what economists hate, or businesses hate, economies hate, is uncertainty, right? There's a massive amount of uncertainty right now. A, we've got COVID, but B, now we've got a war in Europe, which makes it difficult to plan, doesn't it?
It most certainly does, because it's very uncertain as to how long it will take until these supply chain disruptions can begin to ease. When they ease, it's going to be really helpful for us because it takes some of that pressure, I guess, of imported inflation that we import from the rest of the globe. That's out of our control, though, unfortunately. The thing that is within our control in New Zealand is how we react to it. Do we take some of it on the chin? Do we not lift our prices by as much as we'd like because we want to be responsible here? We want to keep expectations of inflation in check, or do we just use it as a justification to lift prices? So that's somewhere where I also believe there's a little bit of corporate responsibility that can come into play that can be helpful for what the government and the Reserve Bank are trying to do.
Well, actually, and we're nearly out of time, but I've been remiss because I haven't mentioned government policy in this at all, really. We touched on it very briefly at the start when you talked about COVID response. There's some significant government policy coming in, and I'm meaning this, and I can't look, I haven't written it down, but we're talking about the new employment laws. Is government policy going to make a difference or come into play here? And are they responsible for some of this?
Well, government has been spending like never before. So what the government is doing with its own balance sheet, and from a regulatory perspective with what people are able to do and how they do it, it can add pressure. So certainly it's not something that we should be dismissive of, and it's something that the government should be exploring and looking at when they put out the budget in May this year. They should be thinking about their role, making sure they're not adding unduly to the inflationary problem, because at the same time you're expecting households and businesses to bear some of the cost of it.
Well, they keep pumping up the minimum wage. They put a new holiday in. I mean, that's all nice to have stuff, right? Well, actually, if you're on the minimum wage, it's crucial at the moment. So I'm not denigrating that. But you know, a new public holiday, as I said, you know, this new employment structure, and I can't even remember what it's called, which is, you know, a lot of critics are saying it's a return to basically compulsory unionism back in the good old days, or bad old days, depending on which way around you look at it.
Yeah, so with regard to the minimum wages and that, one of the things that I would like to see some movement on, actually, is just increasing some of the tax thresholds, particularly for people that are at that, that level of the spectrum, because that can create some more wriggle room in low-income households' budgets without the need for them to necessarily ask for such dramatic wage increases, because we're thinking about discretionary income here, which is dictated in part by taxation. And at present, the government has been running their books are looking much better than they'd anticipated. So there is a few billion dollars there of additional wriggle room that's appeared that wasn't in the Treasury's forecast.
All right, we will wait and see what happens with the Reserve Bank next Wednesday, the 13th. Benji Patterson, independent economist, thank you so much for your time on the Rural Roundup. Great to have a bit of a chat, and I'll let you get back to your crystal ball, okay, and see where we get.
Great, I'll let you know.
Alrighty-o, we will catch up again. Thanks for listening to the Rural Roundup podcast. My name is Andy Thompson. Don't forget, there are plenty more Rural Roundup podcasts on the SENZ app. Go to the app, hit the like and subscribe button so you'll never miss another episode of the Rural Roundup. If you like what you hear, please share the podcast on your social media, or you can listen live to our Rural Roundup show on Sunday mornings from 6 a.m. on the SENZ radio network or the SENZ app. Thanks for listening, everybody.
That was today's The Rural Roundup with Andy Thompson. A new one drops each Monday to Friday at 11 a.m. and listen Sunday morning from 6 for The Rural Roundup radio show on SENZ. Ain't no need.